Ladies and gentlemen, Goody and I are happy to welcome a full house tonight. We've got plenty of people that wanted to come on because one of the best moments in an RSO calendar year is when those extensions open up. And that has happened. And now we're faced with some decisions about what kind of guys a GM and RSO wants to have in the long haul, for the long haul with them in the future. Gentlemen, so happy that you came out tonight. Why don't we go around the table? Everybody chime in, tell us where we're going to be looking for your stuff, and we'll go from there. So, Goody, I'll kick it to you first, partner. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I mean, sadly, I just got this Nick Chubb jersey from Pristine Auction autographed in my first venture. I bought it during the Browns-Bengals game, and unfortunately, Nick Chubb is, you know, out for a while, and he is my favorite player. So I hope the Browns can weather through that. But anyways, it's always fun to talk about football. I think people know where they can find me at this point. So I guess with that, we have some more esteemed writers on the pod joining us. And thanks for coming on like quickly and impromptu. We just kind of said, hey, we want to, before the extension window kind of closes in week five for some of the GMs for the games tomorrow. So I guess I'm going to kick it over to Nick Andrews is here with us.
Yeah. So, hey guys, Nick Andrews, you can find me at @Nick_RSO. I write the weekly article for the Street Free Agents, as well as I've introduced the new One Big Thing that's been posted for the AFC and NFC each week. And currently the high watermark of our RSO team being 13th ranked in Scott Fish, which is surprising despite also losing Nick Chubb, which is going to be one of those, all right, well, let's see how we can go. So great for being on tonight, guys.
All right, and then we got Bernard joining us too. You want to say hello to everyone again, Bernard?
Hello, everyone. Bernard. I'm kidding just a little bit. Thanks for having me.
All right. Always a pleasure, Bernard. And then make a second appearance on the pod. The founder of the Announce the Pick movement. Very happy to have Ryan Krawczyk join us again. Ryan, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you again for having me. And to find me, it's at @WhatGibbsHTTR. It's generally a Washington football account, and keeping the R in there because I'm holding out for a name change to Red Wolves. So,
all right. So I think what we were really looking at today, what we wanted to talk about mainly is extensions. And a lot of Twitter chatter on that. A lot of people responded to me today kind of saying what extensions have happened in their leagues and whatnot. And Kyle sent me what the top five extension players extended and what those averages are. So I guess like right off the top, maybe let's start off talking about those five players and whether you would pull on that on those averages if they're no-brainers, if you put a little more thought in, and then let's maybe talk about some of the extensions you're seeing in your leagues and just how things work. And I guess the first point, I don't know if anyone wants to chime in on this. I think that every year when the extensions happen, you get people who are a little bit angry and come at, you know, the folks in RSO, present company included, about the algorithm and whatnot and what appears to be some weekly randomness or anything else. And I don't know. I personally have always taken the tack, like there's one of these per team per league typically, I think is best practice. And so I don't really get too bent out of shape. If there's players on my team who have a contract that I'm willing to consider, then I'll consider it. If not, I won't. I don't think the league is won and lost for the most part materially on one team signing a player to an extension that is super favorable relative to anyone else. But perhaps you folks have different opinions on that. So whoever wants to chime in first, I guess let's talk about it.
Yeah, so I feel like the extension time is always a very exciting time. Everyone always looks forward to it in my leagues in particular. I think with the extensions, we've seen some in the past that, especially on some of the four-year deals, have really been a good catalyst to help someone build their core. I think where you start to see people get angry is when they're looking and building towards that free agent class coming up, and they're looking at the contracts overview and seeing when contracts expire, and they might be building on trying to get someone like a McCaffrey or see a deep free agent class, and they start to see that kind of fall off a little bit. But it's generally a tool that everybody uses, and I think they've been pretty fair over the years. We've had a couple pretty good deals on our end, like Tyreek Hill. I think 2 years ago, someone got him at a 4-year extension at about $18.5 million. And we had a little bit of clamoring from the league back then with what the algorithm was doing there, because I know Tyreek Hill was hurt at the time. But yeah, I think overall, you know, it's been a great tool, and everyone always is excited to wait for, you know, week five to start up to see what those contracts look like.
Yeah, I have so Ryan, I like that point. And I will say, in general, I tried to sit down. I'm not often the most process driven in terms of my extension analysis, but this year I decided I was going to come up with a few criteria. First of all, how much fun the player was for my team. Two, the availability of free agents. And so here's my piece of advice that I think is actually helpful for RSO GMs. If you go into the contracts tab and check on free agents that are available in 2021, that's available to you now, and you can check on free agents that are available in 2022 as well. I think it's worth perusing those, writing down players that you think that you would actually pursue at auction, and then going to check to see if, let's say, I always have the conundrum of Nick Andrews being a better fantasy player than me and liking the same guys that I do. So I'm always checking to see if he's got cap room at auction or something, right? Like, because then I know I'm going to be spending more than I want to on some obscure player that only Nick and I like. And it's just, he's going to like laugh at me from Canada and just make my life difficult at that some point, right? But in all sincerity, right? You go check availability, you see who's available. And then I think it helps, as Ryan was, I think you can make a little bit no-brainers. And then the last piece is just the market, right? Like whether or not you think when you get to that auction, your deal that you would give would be less than the extension that you're producing at the moment. That these seem like fairly straightforward criteria, but they really helped me. I only made one extension in my league so far because of it this year. So that those are my fam guys, fun, availability, and market.
Yeah, and I mean, to piggy off the back of that too, it's sort of, there's also the gamesmanship of checking out other teams' rosters and seeing if they have multi-players that are coming up for deals, and if they immediately hit it on week five, well, then you can start looking at all the other guys that are going to become available, and there may be an opportunity, depending on how well they're going and how their season's doing, that you could buy potentially a guy if you don't have your own candidate, or if you have multiple candidates, you could have them sort of test the value of what they think they're going to be getting for that that re-sign value, because I know sometimes a lot of leagues they like to put an emphasis on having sort of a trade and sign, or a sign and trade, however you want to phrase it, and then so you can add in a couple extra assets to it for it if it's going to be worth it, or vice versa for yourself if you don't really see yourself as having a signed candidate, that or somebody else really likes a contract on your team and you're not necessarily looking to make a big move this year. Maybe you can move it in, and instead of trading that 1 year player off for a, you know, late second, something just to get some value out of them by re-signing it. Who knows? Maybe you could turn it into a first, or turn it into a young piece in a couple extra seconds or something like that. So there is definitely a lot of gamesmanship that comes in now with the re-signing. And I think last year is added in where you can finally see all the other teams' re-signs. So you can right away tell sort of what the market value is setting for wide receivers, quarterbacks, and running backs that are coming available. So you can know whether your guy is something. Because I know a couple of years ago, I don't think we had that feature, and it made it a big problem. You go and re-sign a guy that you think is a good deal, and then you see your league mate go and sign him for $20 million cheaper over a couple of years, and you go, well, okay, if I had known that, or if I had done that, I probably would have just tried to offer and trade that guy instead of necessarily re-signing the guy that I re-signed.
Right, and a few years ago, it really impacted the trade market, because you almost had to prove to the other person who may have been interested in a deal what the extension was, so because they're banking on, hey, I want this player is expiring, I'm not going to give you a first and a player for it, because unless I see that, you know, that the offer is 4 years and $80 million total for that player or something. What about you, Bernard?
I think one of the things I'm keen on is schedules, because, you know, there's going to be variations in how these extensions go over the course of the year. So I'm really doing like a 3 to 4 week window, looking at their schedules, you know, to see, is this guy really going to see a big or maybe a very worse schedule or a really good schedule coming up that's going to possibly affect that extension value? So I'll do that a little more than I would with concentrating on other contracts in terms of the schedule.
Okay, that's a fair point. And I think that, like, for me, the I guess there's kind of two ways to look at it. Number one, when I extend a player, especially early in the window or whatnot, and I did do that with DJ Chark, I think 4 years and $83 million in the podcast league this year, and he was coming off a pretty cheap contract that I picked up in the dispersal draft, but going from year one to year two, I don't look back with regret. I view it as buying an airplane ticket, and I'm not asking the dude who's sitting next to me like how much they paid for their seat or you know, the woman across the aisle in that case. So like from that perspective, I don't have regrets. If I like something, and I don't necessarily have a preconceived notion of who I'm going to extend in certain leagues, I'm looking at the grocery list and saying, okay, well, this is the best thing I have. And you know, a couple of years ago that was Allen Robinson for 2 years and $16 million total. And I think I banged that drum on Robinson, I think twice in the same league over, you know, first when he tore his ACL year and then again because that was a low foundational piece. But the other thing I think is that people are putting a lot of time and effort into questioning or trying to figure out the algorithm. And I've given some advice on what I think the algorithm looks like loosely here, but like the weekly volatility is what seems to give people the most heartburn here, especially in week five when you're seeing, you know, after a good week, you see Jamison Crowder get a 4-year, $222 million offer, and you're comparing that Cooper Kupp's 4-159 because he had a pretty nondescript game, and then he busted open on like busted coverage against the Giants for a touchdown. And so all of that does influence those values. And if you don't like that volatility, the easy play for me is that a lot of what the algorithm seems to indicate is tied, especially for 4-year players, is tied into the franchise tag. And so if you don't want the volatility of the week to week stuff, just do the math yourself. It's pretty easy with the contracts overview to figure out what the franchise tag is for each position in your league. And really just look at what, you know, top five salaries and what that looks like. And so then you'll have a yardstick to know what that extension would look like if you franchise tagged that player in the offseason. I'm not necessarily advocating doing a franchise tag versus an extension, because like you want to use your contractual assets in the best way possible. But if you're seeing a positional average, and I think that's where a lot of like Mark Andrews valuation has come in with these extensions. So you know, because I'm seeing a lot of them 4-47 million, 4-40. 4-36.5, and I think that's really largely tied into the tight end position. And we'll talk about the specific players that go into that at a certain point, but I think on the 4-year deal, if you walk back a couple million dollars a year from a 4-year deal with the percentages 22% first year through 28% in the year four, you can kind of figure out that, you know, a lot of the extensions for players, especially when the market hasn't gone crazy in your league's auctions, is somewhat more predictable than you think. Now, I'm not saying when you see an offer that David Njoku has a bigger offer than Mark Andrews, that's not out of whack. But, you know, I don't think it really should be giving anyone much heartburn. It's like you just execute on what's there. You do the math, and if you don't like it, you pivot to another week or to the off season.
And Goody, you brought up a good point there with the franchise tag, and I think that would be my advice for people that have multiple players that they're looking at from an extension standpoint and trying to figure out who they want to extend. Might have a good wide receiver, a good running back. We have someone in my league right now that has Nick Chubb and Stephon Diggs, and they're trying to figure out which one they want to tag. I think my advice is always to look at that franchise tag, like you said, and compare it to, you can pretty easily figure out who is going to be what value when it comes to the franchise tag. And then if you wanted to extend that person to long run, you could look at, okay, it's going to be a little bit cheaper than what that tag is. So that's a really good guideline. And then Luke, you hit on the point about finding a player that's fun. And that's always something that I look at too. And I think people need to think about that too at auction, in kind of, you know, in the same vein as the extensions, is when you love a player at auction, you got to go get that player at auction, because you might not get them in your, you know, RSO league for the next 8-9 years if people are tagging and extending. So it's a really good point. Dynasty puts you in the mindset that, like, if you really, really love a guy, just overpay for him a little bit. Make sure you get your guy. Don't be scared to pull the trigger on it from both an extension standpoint, but even more so at auction too, because you always have that option to extend and kind of control their kind of career. So it's always a good point, that fun point there.
Right. Well, so let's talk about the top five players from Kyle's data who have been, in terms of number of extensions given and what those averages look like right now. And some may be self-explanatory. We don't necessarily have to go too deep into. But so number one, Patrick Mahomes, 4 years, $85 million. I think a lot of people picked him in the second round of either Superflex or one QB rookie drafts, I think, back in the day, and that's paid off for them. And that contract, like, I think is way below market, especially in a super flex league. And I think we've talked about this a lot, that you're going to constantly be beating the market on that one, I think, with Mahomes. And I think, Nick, you were tweeting about that this week. So we can come back to Mahomes in a minute. Mahomes Tyreek stack is in full effect. I think is Tyreek is number two, 4 years, $115 million in terms of what his extension. Then another receiver, Michael Thomas, 4 years, $130 million. And obviously maybe taking advantage of some injury pricing there because it's played in a few weeks. Then we have Joe Mixon, 4 years, $90 million, and just got his new contract in Cincinnati and just popped off a decent week, but that contract, he's still fairly young. That contract seems pretty favorable if that was coming my way. And lastly, Juju Smith-Schuster, 4 years, $90 million, and I think Juju's a player that I've seen personally extended leagues that I've been in, and comparatively, I think, Luke, you may have done that in the pod league. 4 years, $86 million. My chart was comparable, 483. Same league, DJ Moore, 4109. And I like both of our numbers better than DJ Moore one at this point. And Cortland Sutton, Tyreek Hill, 4 years, 125.5 in the same league. And then Cortland Sutton was 2 and 24. So a lot of receivers going. So those are the top five in terms of players that have been extended in terms of number of contracts. Are those all definitive thumbs up, no question asked deals if those were coming your way?
Yeah, I mean, I love what, like, frankly, I loved all those deals. I think they get ahead of the market. They are all players that are worthy of more than that and would fetch more than that at auction. And so I do think to that extent, because of the different criteria you guys have laid out, the one thing that would be fascinating is Bernard's criteria, right? Do we do the homework and assume these players that we clearly believe in to extend might go through a rough patch over the next 4 weeks? Underperformers, relative underperformers like Juju and to a large extent DJ Moore too, we think they're going to get better, I think, as most analysts. We think they're going to do better the rest of the season. So I think their price only goes up. But I think Bernard's criteria is the right one. I think they're a no-brainer to extend. The question becomes when.
Yeah, interesting to that one. No, okay, I was going to say that just looking at those, Michael Thomas obviously was class before them. So the reason for his number being so high at $130 million over 4 years likely is going to have that, because most people would have first-round pick, which means that this is and is now being a re-sign value. So lower is it going to be as opposed to Mixon and Juju free and Dalvin Cook, who just actually became options for their fifth year extension. So clearly owners actually are not necessarily as in love this offseason with Mixon and Juju, so they didn't go ahead with the re-sign. So now they're almost being penalized by having to get Mixon and Juju on these larger contracts as opposed to having the option to extend them. So it's just kind of an interesting one there that those are sort of the guys that are now being the most re-signed as opposed to owners sitting and waiting to see what kind of value bounce back they may have depending on week-to-week volatility.
When you guys see a running back like a Joe Mixon hit a 4-year extension, right? And you know that, you know, he got extended, but for running backs in particular, you know, you have the injury concerns that come with them. And usually it's a fairly high price tag to extend them. Does that come into play for any of you at all? For me in particular, unless it's like a top tier running back, I'm generally not extending my running backs for a 4-year deal because of it, but I'm a little bit more conservative on the running back side. What do you guys usually do with those?
Yeah, I'll hop in there. I think it depends on where you're getting that running back, like whether you've got the origination of their contract as a rookie deal in the rookie draft, or it's a startup and you're just paying for that person right off the bat. I think the escalators would probably point to that being more of a rookie deal type thing, but for me, I don't love to give the guys 4 years. I kind of would like to get the rookie deal, maybe that transition tag in the fifth year, and then really play year-to-year optionality with the franchise tag in most cases. I think a guy like Aaron Jones may have been an exception to that, because I think he has a versatile skill set, and I think you're taking a leap on a contract and a player, and that, like, hopefully re-signing with his team. So I think that's someone who's a little bit different. But, like, I mean, basically in terms of people who responded to me today, I've seen values in it. I think even in the Writers League, I had an offer of Kareem Hunt on a rookie deal, and I obviously drafted him when he was on the Chiefs and as a first round. And I think he's like, he wants like 4 and 90 some million, and I'm not really equipped to do that right now. I don't think it just doesn't seem like that's in my best interest. And some of that's age, and then, like, when you see a guy, I mean, I read something. I'm gonna plug this guy in his league for a second, because he tweeted to me today. His name is Gonzalo Sellers, and he's coming from Santander, Spain, and his league is called, he's in a 16 team league in Spain, and his league is called like the Dynasty, or Dynasty, I'm not sure how you would say it, with the Fantasy League, established 2014. And that's kind of awesome that, like, we talk about how our game's global. But he was talking, his league, Leonard Fournette got extended 4 years, $80 million. And that seems to me a little bit different. Some other, he had Juju in that league, 4, 112, Mixon, 4, 84. So, like, Mixon seems like great value compared to Fournette. 4 and 96 for Mahomes, 4 and 40 for Ingram, which is that $10 million price seems to kind of be the league to league franchise tag ballpark, like, that Mark Andrews was getting. And I think I'd much rather pay for Andrews than Evan Ingram at this point. Mike Williams, 2 years, $14 million. So that's kind of a flyer. The low end flyer receiver contract of a guy who has some upside. I feel like that's what I've seen in years past with, like, the Allen Robinson coming off an injury. I've seen similar dollars. So,
yeah. So you're hesitant with those 4-year deals, kind of the same way I am. I mean, it just, they always make me nervous with running backs, unless that's like your top tier running back, like Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley. I'm hitting the button all day and extending those guys. But once you get to that next tier, it always gives me a little bit of angst. I usually focus on, like I said, those top stars in the league for my extensions, or then I'm value hunting, and I like to try to find that young contract that I could get a little bit below market for what I would have to do back at auction. So,
right. Actually, one more thing I forgot is, the funny thing is, because rookie running backs are such a critical piece of this equation, that their contract values are typically not maybe at the outskirts of the top five with the transition tag. So, like, when you look at I looked and did the franchise tag calculation in my home league, and the top two paid running backs right now are Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman. And I don't know why my buddy didn't cut Devontae Freeman this offseason, but he's a little more optimistic than I. But so, like, that's kind of jacking up the value of running backs a little bit. But it also points to why you use the franchise tag in that league on running backs, with that transition tag being for next year being contracts like 4 and 5. And then you extend the receiver, who that market's more dynamic and costly. So one of my friends in that league, for instance, was debating between Ezekiel Elliott and Juju Smith-Schuster, were both expiring, and he did the math the same way as I was describing, saw that Juju was like 4 years, $18 million a year, and whereas, like, receiver contracts, the franchise tag would be like $40 million. And Ezekiel Elliott had a 4-year, $100 million offer and a $25 million franchise tag. So not much different. And so he's going the route of Juju, I believe. But that's kind of all part of the decision-making process.
Going back to Mixon specifically, I generally agree with Ryan on his point about running backs not wanting to extend them for the 4 years. With Mixon, I think we need to remember he came in the league, I think he was 20 years old. I think he's only like 24 now. So he's going to be in his athletic prime during extension years. And he's also, because he signed the real life NFL contract, he's essentially locked in for the next 3-4 years. You know, from a real life perspective too.
Yeah, so as soon as he got extended,
I have a little more confidence in him than I would some others that get extended for that long.
Yeah, and with that real life extension, it plays such a big part, because where I get the hesitancy is more so around when their contracts come up in a year or two, because the way it goes with running backs, you could see them go into a timeshare and sign a lucrative deal somewhere else, and you never know what's going to happen. So they always just give me a little bit more hesitancy than the other positions.
Now, it's fascinating to me that – so it, I take it by both your commentary then that you view the contract extension in real life as a positive checkmark in the Mixon column. So does that mean – and because this is part of my philosophy when I play RSO that's different than other formats as well, I get nervous tethering my fantasy players' fortunes to real-life organizations that I think are bad at playing the fortune game, like that are bad at constructing their teams. Like – I'm bullish as the next guy on Joe Burrow. I think he's wonderful. But I don't think the Bengals understand how to build a franchise. And so that makes me a little bit nervous about Mixon on that front. Does that calculus play into it at all for anybody as they make their long-term commitments and contract extensions? Is that even on the radar for you gentlemen when you're trying to figure out, do I believe in the franchise that this player plays for?
Oh, it does for me, absolutely. But I'm willing to, at his contract cost and or the extension cost, I am willing to say, hopefully they're going to invest in the O-line. Hopefully they're going to get that eventually fixed 1 year, 1 decade, 1 century. I don't know. But sometime. And I wrote part of an article when I was going over contracts, and Mixon was kind of the highlight of that. And it's, once again, this is the quintessential bet on talent. You know, versus situation, you know.
Right. But how, I guess, like, similar question, I guess, with this group. Like, I got another one from Ace to Ace Fantasy. And so more international presence potentially. Those extensions were some of the bigger names. So McCaffrey, 4 years, $200 million. So it doesn't seem like his injury, the fact that he hasn't played in a couple of weeks, is bringing down his market there, nor should it. So I think with a transcendent player like McCaffrey, you do what you can to keep him as long as you can, especially with the age and the production. Dalvin Cook, 4 years, $132 million. I'm not sure if that gives any of you guys pause. Then Cooper Kupp, 4 years, $159 million. And I did not accept a big Cooper Kupp offer in one of my leagues. And so I'm curious about like Cook and Kupp, I guess, in that example.
Yeah, so Cook is an interesting one because he is kind of in that top tier of running back right now still, right? But it's just, do you trust it for the long term? And I think it's something that it depends on the situation with, you know, how long does Kirk Cousins stay the quarterback in Minnesota? How long do they stay dedicated to the run game? And it's those, because he's not like I said, he's right below to me that McCaffrey, Saquon. It's just my philosophy there. I always get a little hesitant on the 4 year high money, regardless who it is, if it's not like that top tier guy. And then just to hit on Luke's point real quick, I feel like I generally focus on talent over situation, just because situations can change so quickly in football. And I think I do see in a lot of my leagues, though, most people tend to look at it the way you do, Luke, where they'll say, do I trust the organization? Do I trust the quarterback situation? I actually ended up getting Juju Smith-Schuster at auction in one of my leagues for 4 years, $36 million, which to me was highway robbery, and people were even questioning what I was paying there. And it's a league that has, you know, it's a competitive league. Guys know what they're doing there. But for some reason, I think they got nervous with the Ben Roethlisberger and Mason Rudolph situation there, and how poorly Juju had played when Ben didn't, you know, wasn't in the lineup and before he got hurt. So, I mean, after he got hurt. So it just, it depends on the appetite. But yeah, even that contract though, Goody, to go back to your point, like with Dalvin Cook, even that gives me angst just because he's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Saquon. And, you know, maybe he could make an argument and he's close to Saquon, but it needs to be like the top tier guy for me to hit the button at that price tag.
Yeah. To Ryan, to your point, actually, it's a fun game theory for that. I'd love to hear from you guys about when we hear about a player like Dalvin Cook and Joe Mixon, who are locked into franchises, as much as I wish they were not questionable, my own dear Minnesota Vikings are one of the franchises that I find making dubious decisions all the time. So, but from the gamesmanship standpoint that I wanted to hear from you guys from, I think it's kind of more fun to hitch my wagon to a player like Juju, who might be moving on in the offseason. There's more variability. All that news will be coming in. He might become the hot name in the offseason when everybody starts sending you offers for him if he gets tethered to a perceived upgrade at quarterback. Or, like, yeah, it's a riskier stock, right? It's a riskier question. It's a riskier game to play, but certainly a more fun one if you like to, like, make the move. And so I like what you say. What do you guys think there? Is it worth chasing guys who if we all agree on their talent, like a player like Juju, I think we do, like the situation gets risky. Does that make it more fun as a fantasy GM to go chase guys that might become the big hot name in the off season or something?
For sure. With Juju, I would say if you're buying now and he hasn't signed that extension, you are definitely taking on a risk of what team he's going to be on. But again, you have to just kind of look at what contract he is being offered in your league and compare that to sort of the top market and sort of that second tier market. Cause most likely he's going to fit in one of those two in terms of where he thinks he values himself based on the algorithm and also his fantasy production. So you have to look at that and just kind of take stock of, okay, well, if he ends up in this sort of scenario and this is the worst case scenario as a free agent, do I think he can produce at that dollar level? And if you think he does, well, then what's the holdup? Just hit the button and resign him. But if you think that he doesn't have that kind of value, either by moving into a more of a timeshare as a receiver, or just the offense is going to take a huge step down and you don't think he's going to be able to produce that, well, then it's not a big deal. You just kind of pass on it. It's sort of, you just have to be able to assess the risk and decide whether that's something you want. Me personally, I'm usually one of those guys, same thing. I'm evaluating not only their contract, but more specifically their dead money in their contract, because guys get very easily moved off of by their team. So guys like Dalvin Cook, guys like Joe Mixon, they've just signed the contract. They have so much dead money on them. They're not going anywhere for at least 2 years. So you know, by signing those contracts right away, they're going to be there. You're going to get full value out of at least two of those years. Whereas somebody, yeah, like Juju, if you sign up for 4 years and he goes and signs with, you know, Green Bay, wow, okay, great. You got the super awesome deal and he's going to be in an offense that just probably will find a way to fit him right in there, as opposed to you go to some, I don't know, let's say he's now the third guy in Seattle and all of a sudden he's in a huge timeshare with those guys. Well, yeah, he's probably not going to be worth $490, but you just have to sort of sit down and evaluate what it's going to be worth and whether you're willing to accept that risk.
Thank you for not taking a shot at Washington there.
The football team. The talk radio has been hot over here, gentlemen, this week, as you might imagine. It has been spicy. There are definitely some defenders and detractors of young Dwayne Haskins in this region. So
yeah, we can get to that in a minute. I think there's, I mean, just to put a bow, I think we're close to putting a bow on this extension stuff. I did an email from Johnny_War, and he's talking about Saquon Barkley in his league has a 4-year extension where he was on the IR and it was like $8.5 million a year. So I think you smash accept that. And I don't know how that happens or whatever. Like, I guess he's an IDP league. He says mid-range linebackers are asking for more than that, so I'm putting up less points. So I don't know how that worked, but, you know, I think in extreme situations, maybe you just reach out to the inquiries at Reality Sports Online. But in terms of putting a bow on the extension, I think one other player I wanted to talk about who didn't make the top five, but just because I've seen is, I know Ryan mentioned him. I had one in one of my leagues, and it is Mark Andrews. And I just kind of want to dive deeper into him a little bit. I looked at some stats and whatnot. And for me, Mark Andrews, like most of these, he's getting 4-year offers. I think in your league, Ryan, it was like 36 and a half. I saw 47. Yep. I think someone tweeted me about like 40 million. So loosely like 10, 11 million a year on the high end. And the question to me isn't necessarily whether that's worth it. It's because I think that's tied into what the positional franchise tag is. It's more diving into the numbers sometimes with a particular player. And in Andrew's case, I think like blindly, like Pepsi Challenge, you know, I think you accept that extension. When you dive deeper, I guess the question is, you have in 2019 he had 64 receptions on 98 targets, 852 yards and 10 touchdowns. So very, very solid numbers. The target share I think was decent. This year so far, I mean this guy just, you know, he's kind of the Chris Carter of tight ends in terms of all he does is score touchdowns. Huh? So he has 12 receptions on 20 targets in 4 games. So 5 targets a game for 166 yards and 4 touchdowns. And just to put that in context, it's a 20% market share of targets. So 20 of 98 targets for Lamar Jackson, whose 98 targets is pretty light. Like I think the most he had in a game was 28 against the Chiefs. And that was a game where he had under 100 yards passing. And that game was a little bit weird. And the Ravens couldn't get much going. So 67 completions for 98 yards, 7 for 98 targets, 769 yards, and 7 touchdowns for Lamar Jackson. So now that you have that information, is that changing anything for you on our friend Nick Andrews' cousin, quote unquote cousin Mark?
I love Mark Andrews. I would extend that in a second. I've been a huge believer in him since college. I do a lot of pre-draft grading, and he was someone that I was probably more bullish than a lot of analysts on. I had him as like a low first round grade for like the actual NFL draft. I think he's a very talented receiver, and he's, when it comes to tight ends, there's not many more sure-handed guys, even though he did drop that pass against the Chiefs on Monday Night Football there. But you know, it's for me, I'm tying myself to Lamar Jackson. I'm tying myself to the Ravens and how they use tight ends and how they frequently are in that 12 personnel. I love how they always run 2 tight ends. I think that's just going to be a staple of that offense go forward. So I'd have no problem tying myself to him. And you know, when you're talking $36, $40 million over 4 years, the risks is pretty low. I mean, you might be getting a high-end tight end. You might be getting a top-3 guy that is a consistent performer at tight end, which I think is a huge position to differentiate when you're talking your weekly leagues and getting that steady production out of a tight end. I know it's not there right now, but I would tie myself to Lamar Jackson and that offense, the way they run it and the way they historically have heavily used their tight ends.
Speaking of that tight end usage, I think that would be the other thing that I would throw in. I too, if you've been listening this offseason, all our listeners know that Mark Andrews is my most extended, my most contracted, my most, like he's the player that I've tethered to the most of my teams. And I'm just a believer in him. I think there's a chance that he overtakes over the course of that extension, the other 2 big names in Kittle and Kelsey as the best tight end in football. And this year, for example, he's in on with a base of 60% snap share of the Titans snaps. Last year, he was only at 40%. And I think for a second year tight end to kind of garner that kind of confidence from a really solid franchise, I'm all in. Call me a believer in Mark Andrews.
Okay. I think with that, let's take a quick pause for our sponsors.
Hey, All About Reality listeners. Are you in the market for top-tier strategy, analysis, and projections for the best football analysts in the industry? Well, if you haven't seen, John Hansen, the fantasy guru, has launched a new venture alongside industry powerhouses Graham Barfield, Joe Dolan, Scott Barrett, and Tom Brawley, fantasypoints.com. They have contributions from NFL Films legend Greg Cosell, NFL insider Adam Kaplan, and former Super Bowl champ and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Mark Addix. The team at Fantasy Points will deliver everything you need for season-long fantasy football, daily fantasy, and NFL betting. Read their content, listen to their podcasts, watch their live stream, use their draft tool and downloads, but most importantly, go sign up with the promo code REALITY, all capitals, for 10% off. That's promo code REALITY, REALITY, for 10% off the newest and best site in the fantasy football industry, fantasypoints.com, the best place to help you score more fantasy points. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And on the flip side of this, now that you have your extension sorted, you know your plan for the future and mapped out, we have to talk about the immediate future. What happens in these next few weeks as players, when we normally are considering doubtful and questionable, now have like a question mark as to whether or not the franchise is going to play their football game. So fortunately, we bring in some expertise here of guys that have considered this and guys that, Bernard, I'll kick it to you first. You've been wrestling with this on the Twitter website. What do you think is the plan for an owner that is facing guys in games that may be pushed or canceled because of this pandemic?
Well, I think we have to look at the games that are being pushed to Monday and the games that are being pushed to Tuesday a little different. If it's a Monday, you might possibly have alternatives to play in their place if they don't play. If it's a Tuesday game, it's an all or nothing bet. You know, they're either playing or not, and you're not going to have a substitute if they aren't playing on a Tuesday. So, and I talked about this on Twitter a little bit. I'm more willing to bet on the premium positions like running back and put my stars in and risk them not playing, because, you know, a lot of the times you're going to be putting in some other guy that, you know, it's a bye week filler that might score, you know, 5 points, might score 10 points, but really isn't a game changer. At a position like QB, it's a lot easier to put in a streamer in there. You're going to guarantee to get points. And usually for most of the guys, the differential isn't going to be as big. So.
Yeah, I think that it's a good point about the Tuesday games. I tend to look at it as long as I have Monday night alternatives, I feel pretty good that I can make a decision by Monday night as to what I'm going to do. And the good news about the games so far has been, you know, with the cancellations, I think by Sunday at 1 p.m., we've had a pretty good sense of what was happening in the games. And there is some degree of a dice roll, but I feel like once you start getting the news that you're getting multiple days of, you know, negative tests coming back, you gotta track it, right? If you got the day before on Saturday, one or two new cases coming in and it looks like it's more up in the air, you know, I'd be more conservative if it's been a couple days without any breaking news. I've been rolling the dice with my guys.
What do you think, Nick? Do you feel similarly to these gentlemen, or are you more you're willing?
Yeah, I'm basically the same. There's definitely a sort of start your studs in the same way that, you know, when you're thinking of a bad matchup, sometimes you're kind of debating on it. It's like, no, I mean, I'm sort of like for Josh Allen this week, he's going to be playing on Tuesday. There's a chance that there's some sort of percentage that he may not be available because the game gets canceled. But really, unless you're also having, you know, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes, or if he wasn't on a bye, some guy like Aaron Rodgers, like he is one of the top scorers in fantasy right now. So unless you have one of those guys just sitting on your bench who could fill in and you don't have to worry about the risk, you know, is it worth putting in Derek Carr for Josh Allen and then you see that 20 point difference in a week? It's probably not. So you might as well just go with your guy. And if something happens, well, go down with the ship. But yeah, there's definitely sort of the ability to start those guys as opposed to sort of just playing it safe. And maybe sometimes you look at your matchup and you go, hey, I'm playing the guy who's tanking this week, so I just want to make sure I get anything so I don't take an L. That's fine. But I would say in most cases, just start your studs.
Very good. And Goody, before we get to Ryan for something special, why don't you bring us home on this COVID analysis?
Right. I think what Nick said is very like poignant in terms of just what your decisions are and with like the stud people. And I think for me, everything is, there's inflection points of data basically on these things each week. So, you know, for me, like 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow when Adam Schefter starts talking about different things and scenarios, and then like you start looking at like has the team flown out or anything else. So like, I think you have a lot of those decisions and your alternatives are important. So number one, I think from a strategical tactical standpoint, especially if you're in super flex leagues or leagues with like a lot of flexes, I think I always want to move a guy who has any type of risk or volatility. Like if I'm playing a guy on Thursday night, I want them locked into a wide receiver or running back position so that my flex has the most flexibility possible.
Great point.
Same thing with like super flex guys, same thing with super flex guys always. And then it becomes like each iteration, and I'm in leagues where where there's teams that make the playoffs and wild cards on total points. So I think that's important to, you know, always be going for a high point total versus beating your opponent. So like that's necessarily in a week to week. So that's usually my mentality with that. But like, for instance, in my home league, I'm facing a decision and I have Stephon Diggs who plays Tuesday night, and then Raheem Mostert may be coming back tomorrow. So in that case, if Mostert's coming back, you know, I'd prefer to play Diggs. My opponent has Cam Newton and Josh Allen as his quarterback, so he's probably locked in with Josh Allen. So in that sense, like the trade-off of if he risks Allen and I risk Diggs, we're probably canceling each other out with that. So maybe I start Diggs, but because Mostert is playing in the 4 o'clock Eastern game or whatever, I have some flexibility to figure out what his status is before I'm in leagues with a lot of flex positions. So this is a flex decision either way for me per se, but you know, not most of the time you're not dealing with a choice between like a Mostert and a Diggs. You're dealing with someone who, you know, you're talking Diggs or Kendrick Bourne or something, you know, or David Moore. And that's where it gets dicier, where like the start your studs, I think I would definitively, no questions asked, go with that.
Well, thanks, buddy. Well said, gentlemen. And we appreciate you guys coming out to do a little fun round tonight. It's been a minute, and it certainly is helpful for RSO GMs to hear your voices and to get, and we would point them towards your work on site, the articles that you continue to write. We'll have them chase you down on Twitter. So before we have them do that, though, Ryan brings us something special to us for the table. And this year, in this offseason, Goody and I have been proud of just the way that our listeners have rallied. Our community has just been brilliant in coming together for really important causes. And we think and this one seems as touching as any, as someone who got deeper into fantasy and who was really kind of saved by fantasy when I lost a loved one to a terrible disease. I think Ryan is gonna touch your hearts. So Ryan, go for it.
Yeah, so I think you hit on a great point, right? The fantasy community, one of the best parts of it is everyone's always willing to rally around charities. And this one, regardless of what football team you like, this is a Washington football team-based charity. These guys are called Hog Farmers. The Hog Farmers is their Twitter handle. And hogfarmerscharity.com is the website you can go to. But they're rallying around a five-year-old named Raylan, who was first diagnosed with DIPG, which is a form of a brain tumor, when he was 14 months old. He went through months of radiation with high success and was in remission for 3 years. But this past March, it really came back with a vengeance. So in the past 6 months, he's gone through 3 different brain surgeries, radiation and chemo with no success. And cancer is now spread throughout his cerebellum and his spine. And the doctors have stopped the chemo at this point. His last hope is a trial drug that he's starting this week to see if it'll give him a little bit more time. So the guys at Hog Farmers are really doing a great thing here. They're trying to raffle a Montez Sweat game-worn jersey. Each entry is $10, and all the money raised is trying to give Raylan a memorable experience for him and his family and send them off to Disney. So we're really trying to support this effort. And, you know, this is a young kid who is having a lot of time robbed from him unfairly. And, you know, it would just be great if we could all come together and try to, you know, do a great experience for him and his family with all the tough things that they've gone through. So if you are interested in donating, again, it's hogfarmerscharity.com or at the Hog Farmers is their Twitter handle. You know, Washington football team has a big history with the Hogs and that offensive line, and that's kind of how they came up with their name. But these guys do a great job rallying around pediatric cancer. They do a lot of great things. They have t-shirts that have ports that as children are getting chemotherapy, they don't have to get their take their shirts off and can comfortably get their treatment. They do a lot of great things. So if you have any interest, please go check these guys out. Go and support Raylan, and any help that the community could give would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Ryan. Let's rally behind Raylan. Let's give these kids all the dignity they deserve and a little bit of joy at this time. And truthfully, you'll be getting that information from our accounts on Twitter as this episode goes up, and so you guys can follow up there. And to that end, that's a good note to end on. These gentlemen are great members of the community. We'll all have this information for you. And for our listeners, where can they find that information then? Nick, why don't we start with you? Where should they go looking for you on Twitter?
Yep. So you guys can find me at @NickAndrews_RSO. And you'll find my articles 3 times a week, like I said, to One Big Things, as well as the Street for Adrian reports.
Very good. And Bernard, how about you, man? Where should people go looking for your stuff?
At BernardFowler1. And you'll find various articles on the Reality Sports Online site.
Well done. And Ryan, as our relatively new man who brings this advocacy to the table, where should people go chase this down?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm at What Gibbs, like Joe Gibbs, HTTR. And as I mentioned before, we're holding out hoping that Red Wolves with the name there, but I'll probably have to eventually change my my handle, unfortunately. And I'll also be putting some content out for the RSO community. So I'll be starting up this week, hammering out some articles for you guys.
Well, welcome to the crew. And as always, my buddy, my partner in crime, Goody, where should people chase you down?
I think they know where to find me at this point, so I don't need to plug anything other than letting Russ cook against your Vikings tomorrow night here in the Pacific Northwest, where we had a cloudy day, but some sun peeked out, so we'll see what happens tomorrow night.
Sounds good, gentlemen. This has been another episode of All About Reality.